baby. Welcome back to the DFS Army Fantasy Football Show. I'm, of course, your host, Flex Shane. I got my guy, Flex, Matt, and Matthew. This is our first opportunity to record. Just you and me, baby. Just you and me talking about this rookie class. What's going on, brother?
Yes, Shane. Happy Easter to everybody and all in America. I think Easter is like a worldwide thing.
It's a pretty international holiday, I would say. Yes.
You're in Canada, and I kind of forgot if this was. Yeah, I mean, Easter's like a Jesus thing, right? So it's got to be a worldwide thing,
It's a Jesus thing. That's right.
It's a Jesus thing. Yes, but let's get on. We're talking about a mock draft. I think essentially this is the last mock draft that we will talk about as far as pre-draft. Mock draft. And the reason this is great is because I like to see, I like to test to see where guys were before as to opposed to where guys are post draft. Last year, we got a little bit crazy with DeShone Tucker in the first round. And then now, you know, post draft, he's a nothing. He's a nobody, but I still recommend to go and get Sean Tucker just to keep him on your taxi squads. But, It's tough this year because I think there's clearly a couple guys that might fall down the list once the draft has started, Shane.
I love this exercise, Matt, because especially as we're trying to dive into the rookies, when you participate, and this is, so to be clear, so this is a league that you run, and it's a group of people that we play in other fantasy football leagues with, primarily dynasty leagues, I'd say, right? So some sharp folks that are in this rookie draft. And the key here is that it's post-combine, but before the rookie draft, right? So we have a little bit of extra data. And I would say, well, I was going to say the first round is relatively chalk, but even then there's still a few players that snuck into the first round that I'm thinking, okay, there could be some value falling to the second round because of that, right? But importantly, Matt, like as we dive into our picks in rounds three, rounds four, rounds five of these dynasty rookie drafts, it forces us, at least it forced me, to go and do a little bit more research on these lower level players, because I would say we're not, every year there's not going to be a Puka Nacua, right? A later round prospect in both the real NFL draft and our rookie drafts that actually has an immediate impact. But there's definitely some gems that I would like to point out. So let's get into it, baby. Let's get going.
He's my best friend. He's my pal. He's my homeboy, my rotten soldier. He's my sweet cheese, my good time boy.
Oh, yes. And it is all of our good time boys, Matthew. So right now, for those of you following on the video feed, I just posted the draft. For those of you who are listening on a podcast feed, well, thank you. Hopefully you're subscribed to the DFS Army podcast feed. Go check out the link. I put the link in the show description. You can go check out the draft board here, Matt. But this is truly randomized, which I like. But let's just quickly talk about where you and I picked. So you chose at the fourth spot, so the 1.4, 2.4, et cetera, and I had the sixth spot. So I'm just going to really quickly here, maybe just read out the first six picks, Matt, because these first six positions are going to be mainly the people who weren't in the playoffs last year, okay? So let's just read them off and see how chalky it is, okay? So the way that we look at this, Matthew, just for the people, it's a super flex, and we assume tight end premium because we want tight ends to be relevant. So we got at one went Caleb Williams, then Marvin Harrison, then, of course, our guy, Brock Bowers to Clipboard Jesus. Very on brand for Clip. Then you at four with Jaden Daniels. Love it. Then we got Drake May. And then Malik Nabers fell to me at six. So let's talk about, is there any surprises here with the first six picks to you?
Well, it's pretty clear that an early surprise is Brock Bowers at three. Now, let's really talk about this here, because I don't think it's that actually crazy. To be honest, I mean, I know that Clipboard Jesus, the guy that we had picking there at three, he's a tight end stand. So we know that. We know he loves tight ends, but let's be real. Malik Nabers, let's assume, okay, this was not, no landing spots were in here. So we're just talking about talent. Now let's imagine in a world where Malik Nabers goes to somewhere that we don't like, let's say it's the Giants, or let's say it's, I don't know, just pick a bad landing spot for Malik Nabers. But Brock Bowers, let's say Brock Bowers goes four to the Cardinals, which is something crazy. Let's say Brock Bowers goes 5 to the Chargers. We really love those landing spots for this guy. And the quarterbacks, which some people are souring on outside of Caleb Williams. So in an opportunity where, okay, this is the last draft, pre-draft, post-combine, we can assume that Brock Bowers, without knowing exactly where he falls, he might be the guy that has to go at 3. And I'm not saying that it's crazy, because I don't think it's that crazy, but it is kind of crazy to see him at 3. But with all your nuts on the line, right, with all the marbles right here on the table, I think Brock Bowers at 3 has to be something that is at least talked about, considering, yes, I know there's a lot of talk that Neighbors might go ahead of Marvin Harrison, but let's be real here. He's not Marvin Harrison. He's not that guy. Okay, we would love for him to be Chase, which is great. Maybe he should be 4. Maybe he should be 3. That's an argument we can have. But Brock Bowers, sight unseen, landing spots unseen, probably fits right here at 3.
To me,
he's an unmistakable prospect. He's an unmistakable prospect.
Yeah, no, that's true, right? And here's the thing about our tight end premium leagues, especially, like, listen, like, this is, we didn't assume a 2 tight end league, but the narrative definitely changes with a 2 tight end league. But even in a just a traditional tight end premium, which would be 1.5 or 1.75 PPR for a tight end, the difference a player like a Brock Bowers has the potential to make is pretty massive, right? But again, we talk about it all the time where, I mean, look no further than Kyle Pitts. We get these generational type, and I put that in parentheses, these generational type tight ends that come out. Remember Evan Ingram? He was supposed to be this game-changing, impactful tight end. And at the end of the day, yes, he's fine for your fantasy team, but he just doesn't make that same difference. Whereas the player that you chose right after that, Jaden Daniels, I mean, to me, that's the type of player that has immediate impact to your team, right? Chances are, listen, there's a drumbeat out there that Jaden Daniels could be the top quarterback selected in the NFL draft. I don't think it's going to happen. I doubt you think it's going to happen. Don't want to speak for you, Matt, but I don't know, man. There's this high that just, like, people don't like Caleb Williams. And, you know, here's a little funny thing, Matt. So we're in a group chat, right? And the things that some of us are afraid, aka my guy, Mike Dickinson, is afraid to say in the group chat for wrath of you and Brandon. He said he messages to me in private, and he sees some warning signs with Caleb Williams. And then you go and we listen to shows that we enjoy, like on NFL Radio, the Moving and Chains mock draft. They didn't have Caleb Williams as a 101. They had Jaden Daniels. So there's a drumbeat. There's a hive out there that doesn't have Caleb Williams as a starter, which means that, or as a first overall pick, which means that if a player like Jaden Daniels goes 101, we talked about in our heads how perfect the landing spot is for a quarterback in Chicago. This is about as good as you could get for that first overall pick in the NFL draft. What if it is Jaden Daniels? And to take that player at number 4, to me, is like, that is a steal, brother. That is an absolute steal at 4.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I'm saying here is Malik Nabers or Brock Bowers absolutely would be pick 103 here. I mean, in the most high stakes of drafts, pre-draft, right now, Brock Bowers or Malik Nabers goes 3. I think that's pretty secure here. Now, for you to say, or for people to say that somebody has some reservations about Caleb Williams at 101, that's fine. That's exactly why Jaden Daniels went 4 and Drake May went 5. And then even JJ McCarthy down here in the draft goes 10.
Yeah.
It's because, okay, let's say you're not as secure. Well, Caleb is the clear 101. But if you're not in on Caleb as 101, then Jaden Daniels, Drake May, JJ McCarthy have to be somewhere in the south of this first round. Brock Bowers, Malik Nabers, they have to be pushed up from there. But I think when you really have it on the line, it's tough to bypass these quarterbacks, right? And that's Jaden Daniels is great. Caleb Williams, great. I'm really getting in on Drake May a little bit more recently. I was almost completely out on him. I wouldn't say completely out. I mean, obviously he's got so much talent that it would be tough to be completely out on him, but at 2 or 3 in a pre-draft format like this, pretty tough to say that any QB could bypass Bowers, Malik Nabers, and Marvin Harrison. So you got to almost slot them in right there at four or five. Caleb Williams, even if you're not really in on him, you can just bet on some type of upside here. Marvin Harrison right there, bet on the upside. Even if it doesn't work out for you, you have to imagine that these are can't-miss prospects. That's why I can be really happy with the Brock Bowers at three, mm-hmm. because he is truly generational. You know, Kyle Pitts was one of these, but he was the first one of these. So I feel like at this time, Kyle Pitts was shot up in drafts because he had something that we hadn't seen before. But now that we've seen it and we've seen that Kyle Pitts kind of he's not perfect now, you know, okay. Is he highly dynamic? Yes. But if he doesn't fit in, then we can see something that's not incredibly great for somebody with so much upside, but he's capped in his upside because he's in an offense where this and that, or the scheme doesn't feature him, whatever. Brock Bowers just to me seems like a guy that you can't miss. Like, he's not somebody that can be schemed out, because when you look at the tape from Georgia, he's literally taking carries, like flex carries, 50 yards. I mean, the guy is truly next level, even for a guy like Pitts. And even if you're not in on Caleb, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, just seem like prospects where you can't get much past six and feel like you can't. You got to let these guys fall. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Let me ask you this question, Matt, because you've definitely spent more time diving into these rookies. So Brock Bowers, clearly the tight end one in this class, right? And then you look down the line, there's players like Jatavian Sanders. He went at 2.8. Theo Johnson went at 4.5. Ben Sinnott went at 4.10. There's not really a lot of sizzle with any of these other tight end prospects. So, I mean, with when you talk about positional scarcity, does that have any does that go into your equation if you're deciding to draft Brock Bowers early in one of these drafts? Or is it just take the player, take the value, move on? Who cares about how deep it is?
No, it does. It does completely, because most of us play in a tight end premium league. Most of us. And if you're not, you should be, because it's blasphemous at this point not to be. But Brock Bowers, there's a big, big, big gap. It's like the freaking Marianas Trench between Brock Bowers and somebody else, right? And here's the thing. This is devoid of any roster construction, this type of draft. So if you're absolutely needing a tight end, like let's say you have Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson somehow, or Josh Allen and Brock Purdy and Kirk Cousins, right?
Like a Kirky, yeah.
Yeah, let's say you got those three quarterbacks and you have the 101. I wouldn't be surprised to take Brock Bowers if you absolutely needed a tight end at 101. If you have three solid QB options, obviously you need to trade out of the 101. You don't just select Brock Bowers. But you could imagine a world where if you absolutely needed a tight end, you could take Brock Bowers at 101.
Let me ask you this, Matt. If it's a two tight end league, so you have to start two tight ends and it's a tight end premium, let's just say 1.5. What do you think? Say there's 50 drafts. How many of these drafts are going to have Brock Bowers go 101? Do you think like 25? Like,
no,
like
I would probably say like 40%. It's a little bit less than 50, because obviously everybody at that point would need a tight end, right? But
yep.
I would say a little bit less, just because I mean, in 50-50, right, that you'd need one, but a little tiny bit less, because it's really incredibly tough to pass up on a prospect like Marvin Harrison. You can let a quarterback go. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like if you have a quarterback, right? I just mentioned it, okay? If you have Josh Allen, Jordan Love, and Brock Purdy, you're not drafting Caleb Williams 101. You should trade out, but let's say you can't. It'd be really tough to bypass Marvin Harrison, but in a two tight end league, 40% go Brock Bowers.
Well, look no further than this draft, Matt. Like, he went Brock Bowers at the 1.3, and then he went Michael Penix at 2.3, and then Spencer Rattler fell to 3.3. So if you want to take a few swings, like there's rumblings where Michael Penix is going to go potentially like picks 10 to 12 to 13, right? Depending if a team decides to trade up. You and Brandon did that Daniel Jeremiah mock draft, and he was picked quite high. I believe, was it Seattle that chose him that one? I can't remember.
Or it was Oakland. Minnesota. It was Oakland, okay. But you're right. You're right. Yeah. Let's pretend that we're on the camp that we don't love Caleb Williams. We're not an incredible fan of Jaden Daniels, Drake May, JJ McCarthy. To take Brock Bowers and a tight end needy team, and then to come back and say, okay, my quarterbacks are Kirk Cousins, who's coming off an injury, Geno Smith, you know, lower end guys like that. And we just double up on the pick with Michael Penix and Spencer Rattler in the second and third round early. That's again, I mean, that's a really nice, I mean, we like the shit on Clip because he goes tight end early, but I mean, I kind of like it. I mean, it's saucy. It really is. But it's really tough not to go Jaden Daniels. I'll just tell you what. I mean, like you said earlier, our guy Brandon, he put in the group chat the touchdown that Jaden Daniels threw to Brandon Ayuk back in their Arizona State days. Mm. It is beautiful. It is beautiful. Even when you look at it and he's young, it is so incredibly beautiful. And to miss out on a talent like that is tough. But you're right. I mean, a lot of these guys don't hit. It kind of sucks, really, because you look at this draft class and you compare it to last year's. Last year's, you were really excited about the top six, and then you kind of were not at all. I'm excited about the top 36 here in this draft, and not all of them are going to hit, Shane. I don't know what to do about it. I might have to see a fucking
round
life.
Round one, 40% will bust. This is just history. This is just math. And speaking of a bust, and this is actually kind of interesting. So Troy Franklin went at 1.8. in this rookie draft, right after Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze, right? So there's a pretty clear teardrop following that. Generally consensus, right? There's the big three wide receivers. So Troy Franklin goes at 1.8. In terms of the buzz before the combine, there was definitely a group of people who really enjoyed Troy Franklin's tape, enjoyed his game. One of the things, if you're just looking at his stats, like one of the more transferable stats is just yards per route run. And Troy Franklin is up there at 2.85 yards per route run, which is pretty exceptional, right? Like at the top end of this class, we've got Marvin Harrison at 3.3, Malik Nabers at 3.06. But generally, Matt, I like to look at yard like two and up is an acceptable yards per route run. Troy Franklin is at 2.85. He didn't do very, very well at the combine, which it's so funny. We always talk about, okay, athleticism doesn't directly translate to the wide receiver position, right? Getting open. Production stats, those are the stats that matter when it comes to the wide receiver position. And yet, following, call it a lackluster combine, the air out of that tire of Troy Franklin really seems to be, it's got a slow leak, baby. And I'm just curious to know, like, where do you sit on Troy Franklin at this point? Is he even a round one pick for you?
No, absolutely not. Troy Franklin is not a round one pick for me, but understandable that he would go in the first round again, pre-draft, not knowing where he goes. I can understand why you would bet on the talent of Troy Franklin. Now, there is, again, a trench between Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, and then the next guy. So What is not crazy is to see who you would have in that next tier. Again, when your back is against the wall, what are you selecting here? Keon Coleman, A.D. Mitchell, Brian Thomas, Troy Franklin, and even Xavier Worthy, for that matter, would all be in a tier by themselves. Now, some may have the tier split at that point, even between those four or five guys. But a lot of people, again, if your back is against the wall, that tier is not split. So it is okay to see that Troy Franklin would edge out here. I can understand that. I would not do it, but at the same time, Troy Franklin would end up being a very last pick of the first round guy. If Troy Franklin goes to the Chiefs and Brian Thomas goes to the Panthers, you're absolutely going Troy Franklin here. So again, devoid of any landing spots, it's easy to see why Troy Franklin would go ahead of a Brian Thomas here. That's not as concerning as I would imagine. But again, we get to about 2.8 before this draft starts to go into a second tier for me, because again, I want everybody from 2.7 down, and you should get as many of these guys. It's kind of weird that it seems that way, because even though the 40% bust rate on first, I mean, it's probably heavier on second round picks. I want these guys, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, Jalen Wright at pick 2.9, I feel like that's totally acceptable, right? Tennessee running back.
I mean, it's acceptable, but I hate him. I don't like
you hate Jalen Wright.
I don't.
Okay, tell me
about
that. Cause I'm kind of starting to like Jalen Wright a little bit.
It's easy to fall in love with Jalen Wright, but the singular stat that you should go back and pay attention to when you're watching tape is that he had more runs with a light box on the defensive side than he did with a heavy box. So I want to say that a light box is 4 or 5 and a heavy box is 6 or, you know, even 5, 6, 7 or, you know, something like that. So when he has a light box, he produced the way he did, and right. You can see it, right? But that's with the light box. And how, I mean, you should, right? A guy with his speed and size, he absolutely should be producing with the amount of defenders that are going against him. I mean, it's 5 offensive linemen. You have 4 defensive players to even block against. That seems like you should win every single time, right? And the fact that he doesn't win every single time at an incredible highlight reel, that's what scares me a lot. And when you know that, right? So I just told you that. You can go back and watch the tape. When he does have stack boxes, he doesn't look incredible. And so,
well, I've got the
isn't everything.
Yeah, no, I think that's really a key point there, Matt. Like when I look at the PFF advanced data here, you look at just his percentile. So his zone grade, he's a 98th percentile. His gap grade, he's a 96th percentile. But when you look at his attempts here in terms of the A gap, B gap, C gap, most of them were actually up the A gap, so up the center. But he still did go wide 32 times out of the attempts, which was second highest. So they definitely want to use his outside speed in zone or against zones. So yeah, it's one of those situations where he's got to fall to the right team, right? Like a Devon Achane last year fell to the right team with Miami. They know how to use him. Jalen Wright needs to fall to the right team, because if they're going to just bang him up the middle, that's not going to be successful. That's not going to be his skill set. But right at the 2.9, like to me, that's kind of a sweet spot.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. 2.9 is a sweet spot. You know, I would absolutely, once you get to about 2.9, 2.10 and beyond, you're in this draft, usually you're taking shots early second round.
Yeah.
We are not taking shots until you get to 2.9 and above, which speaks to this class. But 2.9, I mean, yeah, take a shot in Jalen Wright if you need a running back, if you need a situation. But that's absolutely the Mendoza line. I would probably take a better shot on Braylon Allen, who went on 3-1. If I'm taking a shot on a guy, I want somebody with like 3 down skill set. I want somebody that has a really good floor if I'm taking a shot, or somebody that has just incredible upside, which I don't think that's Jalen Wright. He doesn't speak to any of those.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Well, here's the thing, Matt. There's a player that I'm absolutely falling in love with. The more I watch his tape, he probably is going to be thought of to be just a slot wide receiver, but I feel like he can play outside, and that's Ricky Pearsall. I got him at pick 3.6. To me, Ricky deserves to be a round 2 pick just because of that upside, because of the versatility. He's one of these players that I think is going to demand the ball to come to him, and where he works really well is right around that 10 to 12 yard mark. So he's going to be a first down machine, and even if he does get paired up with like a young wide receiver or a young quarterback, he can be successful. He could be one of these types of players. So Ricky Pearsall fell to me at 3.6. I know you like Ricky. I think you were the one who first kind of got me intrigued. Like, I love this player. So when you get excited about a player, that's when I want to go, okay, I got to watch this kid.
Yeah, game. That's when you got to go steal him from me is what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So, well, you got Marshawn Lloyd. You picked 3.4, and Ricky Pearsall fell to me at 3.6. So I kind of get that, right? Like Marshawn Lloyd, he did really well at the Senior Bowl, and we'll see how transferable it is, right? Like it's – we're round 3. But in terms of success in the NFL, like to me, a Ricky Pearsall, likely right now he's being projected to have at least day two capital. I've seen some mocks where they haven't been in round two. So he should have the draft capital, but
Ricky Pearsall
also far.
Well, it's not be, it, I would tell you right now, again, your back is against the wall, which means you are forced to take guys that you are betting on. Again, a Jalen Wright, a Bucky Irving, a Braylon Allen, right? Xavier Legette went 3-2. He may be a first round wide receiver going 3-2. So again, when your back is against the wall and you look at some type of roster construction, it's easy to see how Ricky Pearsall can go 3.6 because you know exactly what he's going to be. You're not betting on some extreme upside with Ricky Pearsall. You already know where his upside is going to be. He's not going to be DK Metcalf. He's not. Like, and that's okay because I love Ricky Pearsall and I think that he's going to be dynamic at the next level. But is he an 800-yard, 6-touchdown, 60-catch guy? Absolutely. And we love those guys. Those are dead wide receiver threes on your team that you can slot in every single week, and that's great. But when you look at Devontae Walker, Jalen Polk, Xavier Legette, not Roman Wilson, because Roman and Pearsall are very similar. Devontae Walker could easily be the best wide receiver in the entire NFL. I mean, if you pair him in a great gunner, you know, if Devontae Walker goes to the Bills and plays with Josh Allen for 5 years, you could absolutely see with that size speed combination that is just unheard of in the NFL, 6 foot, whatever, 4.3 speed, a guy with a gunslinger arm like Josh Allen who could really huff it 38 yards past everybody else in the NFL. Devontae Walker has some legit upside that could go best receiver in the NFL. So that's why Ricky Pearsall goes 3-6, because he is at best your favorite slot wide receiver plus with some upside, right?
The thing that scares me though, Matt, about like these bigger players like a Devontae Walker versus a Ricky Pearsall is that we're seeing how the NFL is evolving, right? It's these quick routes. It's get the ball out of our hand. A 6-7 yard reception is as good as a rush attempt, right? It's almost better than a rush attempt versus a player like Devontae Walker. I mean, he's a big size speed type specimen, but when I look here, he only had 10 contested catches last year, right? So he's not even winning necessarily by using his body. And in the NFL nowadays, it's these quick wide receivers, these yards after the catch wide receivers like a Ricky Pearsall, that like a Ladd McConkey, we talked about him on the last show, that these guys get the ball in their hands and then they make something happen. Those are the types of players that maybe, and I got a thing for those types of players, right? Like the AJ Browns chubby of the world. Got oh, yeah, chubby. Absolutely, right? Like these big BMI chub specialists. Yes, I'm telling you, Matt. It's these BMI specialists that I used to be into, but the NFL is slowly getting scared off by these types of players. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why Addy Mitchell worries me a little bit, right? Brian Thomas worries me a little bit. Like just where they're going. And so to me, like after those big three wide receivers, we talk about how deep this wide receiver class is. And yes, there's going to be a lot of, I think, a lot of wide receiver threes, which we need wide receiver threes on our team, right? We're talking guys who are going to score 12 to 15 points, PPR points in a given week that are pretty reliable. We're comfortable plugging into our lineup. But in terms of pure massive upside, I don't really see it other than these big three players. So with that in mind, that's why I'm going to pivot towards these PPR machines. Yes, they might only get 7-8 touchdowns in a given week, and they don't have that massive boom upside, right? So we're talking about if you're playing in an underdog best ball draft, maybe you don't gravitate towards these types of players. But every single week, when it's week 8, the bye weeks are there, you've got a few injuries, it's the Ricky Pearsalls of the world that I'm far more comfortable plugging into my lineup because I know they're going to get me 10, 11 points pretty safely versus a Jalen Polk, a Devontae Walker that might get me 4 points.
Yeah, when we're talking about Devontae Walker and Jalen Polk specifically, again, these are 2.10, 2.11 player, like drafted players. But when you disrespect Brian Thomas like that, it's it's pretty crazy for me to hear you say that because here's the thing about these guys. You act like a guy like Ricky Pearsall, Roman Wilson can be more effective in today's NFL. The reason why that is because it's been a long time since we've had a Julio Jones, since we've had guys like Brian Thomas, who have 6 foot three, you know, 4'3" upside. A.D. Mitchell, same thing. It's been a while. So I know it's incredibly tough to bet on this class. Like you're the guy that's saying, okay, these are going to be the outliers. But at the same time, we just haven't seen players like this. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible to say, oh my gosh, a guy like Brian Thomas Jr., I'm not going to bet on this upside because I haven't seen it since Julio Jones, or I haven't seen it since freaking Megatron, or because freaking 5 years ago, these players haven't panned out. Well, these guys are not the same. These guys are absolutely not the same. So I'm going to go ahead and bet on a Brian Thomas and A.D. Mitchell. These are my guys. I want to come out of every draft with Brian Thomas Jr. and A.D. Mitchell, and I will see you later on the upside.
Well, so in terms of this ranking, like, let's just look at what went here. So we went Troy Franklin, then Brian Thomas. This is just for the wide receivers. Then Keon Coleman, A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy. I definitely have Brian Thomas ahead of A.D. Mitchell, for sure. But this was an interesting stat that I found this morning. So, again, this is per PFF data. When you look at the number of go routes, which is just, you know, go catch that damn ball, go route, right, by Brian Thomas, out of his 17 touchdowns last year, Matt, he ran 14 go routes. He had 12 receptions. He had 10 touchdowns for 502 yards on those go routes. Those are just, like, massive, massive upside plays, right? And those are the types of plays that are going to get him drafted in round one of the NFL. And I have no doubt that Brian Thomas is going to have a very impactful career for the NFL team that he plays for. But to me, I get these like Christian Watson type vibes out of him. And yes, I would say Christian Watson was a more raw prospect than Brian Thomas. I'm going to concede that for sure. But he's one of these players where he's going to get you probably 18, 19 points, maybe 2-3 weeks in a row, and you're going to plug him in week four, and he's going to get you 4 points.
Yeah, and that's okay. I'm 100% okay with that because the upside of 40 points, the upside of Brian Thomas transcending that Christian Watson mark and becoming the, you know, the A.J. Brown, you know, I'm willing to bet on that. Again, we haven't seen as many size speed guys like this in quite some time. Brian Thomas, A.D. Mitchell, okay? Even Xavier Worthy, even though he's small, he's extra, extra fast, right? So I'm willing to bet on the upside and take a 14 or take a 3 weeks with 28 points and then the fourth week being nothing because I imagine that Brian Thomas will transcend that loop where he will break through to being that, you know, Davante Adams, which is what I expect. And the league is missing these guys. The NFL that we watch today are absolutely missing these alphas. And I think we got about five of them in this class. I could even argue eight alphas in this class, and I want them all.
Okay, where are you at on Xavier Worthy? Can he be in that alpha conversation at his size?
No, absolutely not. No. Him and Keon Coleman, this is a great thing that we did here because Keon Coleman went 111. And again, when your back is on the wall, you got to bet on upside. And he has the tools to say that he can absolutely be on the upside a Dez Bryant. So I get it. But I'm out on Keon Coleman. I'm out on Xavier Worthy. I'm close to being out on Ladd McConkey just because of where you have to get him.
Okay, fair enough.
In my opinion, 2.5 where he went right here, that's perfect. Okay, I can't be out on a guy going 2.5. But Ladd McConkey might go in the first round, might be that guy that you have to draft at 1.8 to get him, right, or 1.9. And at that point, I'm out on him. Ladd McConkey, love Ladd McConkey, but I'd rather get him in the third round. If I can get Ladd in the third round, I'll draft him, but I'm not, right? So I'm not drafting him. A guy that I really think I'm still going to ride the bus on is Xavier Leggett. I am. He absolutely looks like DK Metcalf in college, And in my personal opinion, that he only looks that way because he is that next level dog, right? And if he gets to the NFL and he continues that next level dog mentality, he's going to be somebody that you're going to wish that you had him a lot earlier, and that's fine. If he falls to 3.2, I'm going to draft him every single time. I'm going to draft him before DeVontez Walker and Jalen Polk, I tell you that much.
Yeah, Jalen Polk, I don't get that spot. I don't, that one, that he's, to me, is such a meh player. Like, I don't get with Jalen Polk. One of the things I, in terms of Feather and Xavier Leggett's cap is his yards per route run, 2.6 yards. So to me, like, that, he definitely stands out there. Let me ask you a question here, because a lot of the things we focus on throughout our rookie process, definitely the combine, right? Senior Bowl to me is a great opportunity to meet some of these older prospects and see how they show out. But the Shrine Bowl, both Malik Washington and Taj Washington were the standouts at the Shrine Bowl. That's
the Washington brothers.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I took a shot of him at 5.6 in my last pick of the draft. He just stands out. But when I look at a lot of these advanced metrics, Taj Washington is there. Yards after the catch, he is there. In terms of, this is from PFF, just combined census ranking of all the stable metrics. So stable metrics for the PFF is just metrics that are transferable to the NFL level. Taj Washington's number 2 after Malachi Corley, which I guess take it for what it is. And then you look at, in terms of yards after the catch per reception, Taj Washington is third in this class at 8.2. So Taj Washington checks a lot of boxes with the advanced analytics, yet he didn't even go off the board in this mock draft, and he's not really getting a lot of buzz. I haven't really heard a lot of shows talking about him as we're going through this rookie process. So do you have a take on a player like a Taj Washington, or is that a little bit too deep for you?
It's right not that it's too deep. It's just that Taj Washington, you gotta, where there's smoke, there's fire kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't go in the top 5 rounds of any rookie draft, then you just have to imagine that Taj Washington's upside is a Doug Baldwin, an undrafted guy that can come in and actually play undrafted for our fantasy teams. Obviously, I think Taj Washington's actually probably 5th or 6th round receiver at this point.
That's what I think. Yeah.
You know, the thing about a guy like Taj Washington, and you, again, it just speaks to how great this class is, because you look at previous years where receivers have gone in the 6th or 7th round and they have been absolute, like, what are you even doing drafting this guy, because he's not that good. Taj Washington is good, but he's stuck behind guys that are much better than him. Even incoming true freshmen that are much better than Taj Washington, right? So
yeah, no, that's fair.
So, you know, by this time, if he hasn't produced at an extreme clip, something that is really put on tape, then all I could say is you could bet on some upside post our 5th round draft picks. There'd be guys you would put on waivers and hope to get them, throw them on your taxi squad and wish for the best, which is completely fine with me. But I don't think Taj Washington is as good as Malik. Malik is a single coverage demon. I mean, my guy in man will, I think he has the best man win rate in the class. I maybe, but he's just small. He's just a small guy. he isn't incredibly big. He's not showing you Xavier Leggett type metrics, but for what he is, he's probably a slot guy in the NFL. He's not going to go outside. He's not going to go outside. But do we love these slot winners like Roman Wilson? Yeah. The thing about Ricky Pearsall, just to go back to our last thing, is Ricky Pearsall can play outside. Okay.
That's what I
challenge him. Challenge Ricky Pearsall to play outside. Roman Wilson will not play outside. That's why Ricky Pearsall has to be going above Roman Wilson, in my opinion, is Ricky is dynamic. Okay. Watch. Oh my gosh. I can't even talk about it. Go and see the one-handed catch he had with Anthony Richardson.
Like, just triple coverage.
Oh,
beautiful.
It's unreal the type of athlete Ricky Pearsall is. And I want to stop talking about Ricky Pearsall because you're going to draft him ahead of me. And I hate you for it, because I would draft Ricky Pearsall at 2.8. So that's 100% would draft Ricky Pearsall there. But back to Malik Washington, small guys. Yeah. I don't think in this 5th round here that any of these wide receivers are going to do anything. Johnny Wilson is the one that that probably stands out a little bit more. 6 foot six, a big guy. Maybe in previous years, you might have seen somebody like this in the early second round, right? With his type of athleticism. He just looks slow on tape, but only because he's a fucking giraffe. You know, giraffes look slow, right? But they're not. They're actually going pretty fast, but he's a giraffe. Him, Theo Johnson, I think could actually be the guys that come out of this third round where, well, you draft them before the third round or maybe in the third round, but they could be guys that absolutely end up with third round plus upside. But you should trade them. You should trade them the second that happens, just because, right? I mean, because doesn't Johnny Wilson just scream to you as the second that guy has a good NFL game, we're offing him. We're trying to get a second round pick for him.
I just don't think he will, right? I mean, if it was as simple as throw up the ball to the tall guy, I mean, we'd see a lot more production from the tight end position, right? That's just not how the NFL works nowadays. I mean, Johnny Wilson, like, yeah, he's cool. He's a fun prospect, but in terms of having actual NFL impact, I just don't see it. I definitely don't see it. I'm looking at just, again, like the anatomy of the draft, Matt, and just to kind of take a step back from the player takes here, okay? So in the first round, of course, we had Brock Bowers go, but other than that, it was pretty much quarterbacks and wide receivers. It wasn't until pick 2.2 that Jonathan Brooks was the first running back off the board. That's probably how it's going to be. Even if we see these running backs, even rounds 2, 3, or 4, chances are the first round is going to be littered with all these other positions and not a running back. So are we okay with that?
Yeah. Again, remember, this is pre-draft, so we don't know the landing spots, right? So I'm even surprised that Jonathan Brooks went 2.2. I mean, to select him ahead of Michael Penix, ahead of Bo Nix, who could be first-round quarterbacks, right, is tough. I would say 2.5 is the Mendoza line to start drafting that next tier, right? Ladd McConkey, Trey Benson, Jonathan Brooks, Blake Corum. Those are your tier twos. And what I mean by that is in any other draft year, you'd get every guy before that, probably first round, right? Like Michael Penix, he went 2.3 in this final mock that we did here, but Michael Penix absolutely could be 1.6. In any other draft, in any other year, he could be 1.6, and I would agree there. To take Jonathan Brooks 2.2 ahead of him, again, it's got to be roster construction. It's got to be understanding that, oh my gosh, there's no running back that's been selected yet, so we might as well go ahead. No, absolutely not. Jonathan Brooks coming off an injury, don't know what team he's going to. There's no way in the world he would get drafted before Michael Penix and Bo Nix. I'm surprised he did here, but 2.5, the Ladd McConkey or your number one running back, I'd probably go running back. I mean, it's not a deep class, but the first five guys I really like. Yeah, I'd love to have them on my team.
Yeah, and if I look at players that could fall out of the first round and other players who could move up into the first round, like I could see a Troy Franklin, a Keon Coleman, even A.D. Mitchell falling out of the first round, players like a Michael Penix of the world, or like I'm just looking here, Matt, at teams that need running backs that have early round, I call it mid-round 2 picks and early round 3 picks. So the Chargers have picked 37 and 39. They've got Gus Edwards. He's not the bell cow, despite what they say. He ain't going to be the bell cow, okay? You look at Arizona. They've got 3 third-round picks, picks 66, 71, and 90. I could see that a player like that would be in a great spot. Of course, Dallas. Rico Dowdle currently is their current starting running back. I don't see that happening. They've got pick 56 and 87.
If Jonathan Brooks goes in the first round to Dallas, like if they're that crazy to go ahead and do something like that, that would be your 1.8.
Well, I could see a player at 56 going for Dallas. I don't see them picking at pick 24 a running back. That'd be stupid, right?
No, it'd be dumb. Really dumb. But imagine it.
Pick 56? I could imagine that. And then, depending on who that is, if that's a Jonathan Brooks, if that's a Trey Benson, I could see one of those players going right around pick 111, 112, right?
Oh, 100%. I would say it has to go ahead of Ladd McConkey. It has to.
I agree. Yeah, to me, that like those are the types of landing spots. But then after that, man, like there's definitely some players in round three here. Like again, I think Roman Wilson could be a late round two pick. Ricky Pearsall, depending where he goes. Marshawn Lloyd, we talked about. Spencer Rattler, man, I'm still not in on Rattler. To me, he just seems like not even like a Will Levis. To me, he feels like one of these players where he might get an opportunity for a year to start, not in his first year, but like in year two. Like, oh, let's just roll the dice and see what we have with this kid. But I don't actually see him being productive in the NFL. Like maybe a fine backup, a Gardner Minshew type player.
Yeah. He is, in my opinion, he is a Johnny Manziel. He is a guy that if he hits, he's going to hit big. Like it's going to be something where all of a sudden you were so low on Spencer Rattler. You were the guy that was not a Spencer Rattler truther, but if you were a truther to Spencer Rattler, you're going to come out smelling like roses. I'm a Spencer Rattler guy. I love Spencer Rattler. I don't care that he's small. I don't, you know, the thing about him and Bryce Young, if you were to compare the two quarterbacks, I'm going to take Spencer Rattler because I know that Bryce Young won't take chances. And I think in order for a guy like Bryce Young, a 6 foot guy, 200 pounds, in order for a guy like that to hit in the NFL, you got to be dynamic. And I would prefer somebody trying to be dynamic over somebody that knows they're not dynamic and just wants to make every right throw. I like Spencer Rattler. I'm the guy that went Michael Pratt in the fifth round here. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to bet on a little bit of rushing upside. I'm going to bet on the fact that maybe some of the Senior Bowl stuff, you know, gets him choked up. I would say Sam Howell is the peak pinnacle of some of these fourth or fifth round quarterbacks. Even Spencer Rattler. If Spencer Rattler can be Sam Howell, I wheels up. I mean, Sam Howell could be the next quarterback of the dynasty of the Seattle Seahawks. We don't know, but Spencer Rattler, in my opinion, I mean, you get two incredible talents like Xavier Leggett and Spencer Rattler. You put them together and you see what type of magic can come out of it. And if they weren't anything, if Xavier and Spencer were nothing, they wouldn't even pop. But what's incredible is they popped high end on tape. They popped high end in numbers. And I'm going to bet on these guys. They went right next to each other in the third round. That's incredible. With your back against the wall, early third round, Spencer Rattler, Xavier Leggett. I'm going to be in. I'm going to take them in the third round. You're saying you're not. You're not going to take Spencer Rattler in the third round?
To me, he's just such a wasted pick. He's 6 foot, 211. He's got backup quarterback written all over him.
Yeah, so did Bryce Young, but he went one overall. That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if Spencer Rattler somehow squeaks into round one of the NFL draft, I don't think he will, then I'd consider it. Other than that, he's going to be round two, round three, round four fodder, and that's it. He's, like you mentioned Sam Howell. Actually, he was a player that I was thinking in my head, but I just couldn't remember specifically. I'm like, Sam Howell? I'm Sam Darnold? I was messing up. It's early in the morning still. So I didn't say it. But Sam Howell was the player that I was thinking in my head exactly who this player is going to be, where he might get an opportunity for a few games. Like, listen, for our Superflex leagues, I love these types of players. I love loading up my roster with these backup type players. If you're going to get a few, two, three, it's like backup running backs, man. It's the same principle with the way that the quarterback position got injured last year. In the last few years, you need depth at this position. So Spencer Rattler in round three of a draft like this, I have no issues with 3.3 for Spencer Rattler. That's fine. If he starts to sneak into early round two, which if he gets decent draft capital, if he falls to the quote, right team.
The Rams seem to be the nuts landing spot is the Rams.
Yeah, but even then, like Matthew Stafford, let's say he retires in a year or two. Are they going to say, okay, Spencer, here's the tickets to the kingdom. It's like, we're just going to trust you. It's like, nah, I'm not going to trust Spencer Rattler with my franchise. No freaking way, man. So to me, pick 3.3, that's fine. But I would much rather go upside with Ricky Pearsall, Roman Wilson, Marshawn Lloyd. Like I would choose all those players before Spencer Rattler, unless he fell into round one, which again, caveat, I don't think is going to happen.
I'm with you. My final things to say is Malachi Corley, 4.1. I think that is a perfect spot. If Malachi Corley is not gone by the third round, finally, you can draft him with with some confidence, because as a fourth round pick, that's about my Mendoza line. I think that the hype on him is way too much. I agree that he's a good receiver, but fourth round, that's about where I'd like. Yeah, 4.1, right? I'm not letting him sneak past me if I got the 4.1. Even if I have the 3.12, I probably would say, like, you know, 10, 11, 12 in the third round, I got to probably go get Malachi Corley. But I'm going to go ahead and say, yep, he's about right. He's priced in right where he's at. Joe Milton, I mean, that's somebody in the fourth round I probably would take over a Frank Gore Jr., over a Luke McCaffrey. I'm going to take the extreme bomb upside and say, hey, can this guy just shelve in and throw it deep on the right team and end up coming out with some value? Yeah, quarterbacks are the ones in the fourth or fifth round that I'd love to take shots on, because if they end up like a Gardner Minshew, you can off them for a third or a second round pick the second that they become relevant. And that's great. You can't seem to do that with a wide receiver, it seems like. So I like to take shots on running backs and quarterbacks in that fourth round. But Malachi Corley there at 4.1, that just seems too crazy to me.
I mean, I can see Corley, Matt, moving into like the second half of round three, or even like mid round three. Like, to me, that's kind of a sweet spot for those types of players where, again, if he falls to this, to a team that actually understands how to use him, because here's the thing, I can't remember what show I was listening to, but this is valuable. Where if a team is in a hurry-up offense, right, the value there is that you have a player like Corley that can move up all around the formation. It's a total cliche, but these Swiss Army knife type players, right? And what's great about those types of guys is that if you are in a hurry-up situation and you don't want your defensive players to be subbed, you just move players around the formation, you create different looks, and you can pressure the defense. So that's the type of player where if he falls to the right team with creative coaches, so there's a lot of if, right? And then it's a situationally based player. But that's how Corley, to me, can get his get some ground in the NFL and build his way onto a depth chart. That's how he's going to be successful. But there's a big if. It's a lot of ifs, but mid to late round three, to me, that's when you can start taking upside type plays. And later on, I prefer, like you said, to go backup quarterback, backup running back, because those are the lottery ticket type players. And a lot of these wide receivers are just wasted picks, let's be honest, right? But Corley, to me, he fits that bill where I like that scratch off lottery ticket.
Yep, he's not a wasted pick. And it's great to see him at 4.1, because I have been in drafts where I've seen Malachi Corley late second round. Some people are really high on him. I don't imagine that you can be that high on Malachi Corley. Brennan Rice seems to be the guy for me in the fourth round. If I'm going to take a wide receiver, I'm going to bet on legacy. I'm going to bet on size. I'm going to bet on things that I think can hit, versus Malachi Corley just seems to me like a sub player on offense. But there's a lot of guys we didn't talk about, and maybe we'll get some more time to talk about them in another podcast. But absolutely, happy Easter to you, my friend. I really appreciate it's the first time that we've been on together, just me and you, in quite some time. Yeah, so
the original OGs, man. We go way back. So we're just getting started. I finally have although I'm not recording at home right now, but finally have an actual recording space at home again. So trying to get back into a weekly show. You and Brandon, Matt, I was complimenting Brandon last week when we did our show together. You and Brandon, man, absolutely crushed. I've been crushing, I should say, because we still got lots of time left. This draft content, I keep telling people, go back. If you're still, because listen, Matt, we're still only in March. The draft's about a month away. People are still learning about these rookies. Go back to the DFS Army podcast feed, scroll down, look for anything draft-related fantasy football content. There's a very good chance it's going to be you and Brandon talking knowledge to the people. And can I just say something personally? You and Brandon saved me. I was packing like crazy for just days and days and days, and I would just go and I would love listening to your content. So go back either on this channel or on the podcast feed, watch some of the early videos, because you can kind of see the evolution. And what the beautiful part about your early shows are, Matt, is they're un unbastardized with all this other content that is entering the space. It's pure. It's how do we feel about these players? There hasn't been a ton of widespread talk yet. So this groupthink isn't out there yet. It's pure, it's unadulterated, and it's quality content. Go check out dfsarmy.com. Every week it feels like we're having people winning $100,000. We haven't had a millimaker in a little while, Matt, but
like it's hard to do, right? I mean, come on.
Hard to do, but we had one last year, man. So people are winning real money, and especially those of you who are in the MMA, golf is starting to pick back up. Go check out the content. Of course, we've got our Discord with all the latest information. That's where you can talk to us in person, or I guess not in person, but directly if you have questions. So go check it out, dfsarmy.com. And make sure you like and subscribe because, hey, listen, we spend a lot of time, we put a lot of work into these, and at the end of the day, we just want to have a little bit of fun. So go follow, subscribe, click that bell when we go live, and don't miss a show. So for Flex Matt, I'm Flex Shane, and we are the DFS Army Fantasy Football Show. Happy Easter.